You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, 88.1 in Ithaca and 91.9 in Watkins Glen. And this is the Made of Clay Report. And our guest on this edition of the Made of Clay Report is Adam Michaelides. Adam, it's good to have you here this morning.
It's good to be here, Eric. Thanks.
So the way we start the show is with this canned question, but it's a way to get us started. You know, who are you? What are some of the pieces of the mosaic, in broad sketch, of who you are as a person, the labels you may wear, however you want to take it?
So who am I? Good question. I guess I am a resident of Tompkins County. I'm in my 40s. I'm a husband. I'm a father. I work full time. I work over at the Cooperative Extension, and I do public education. My family is half my family is from Cyprus, and the other half is pretty American. And let's see. What else? What else is there about me?
What is the quality that you try to bring into the world? What are the values, attitudes? What are the things that kind of give your life texture, meaning?
Yeah. I guess I try to leave the world a better place than where I found it. That's that's kind of what I try and do with my work and with my life, and I sometimes succeed, and sometimes I don't.
Yeah. Or just simply struggle.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's not clear.
Right.
Yeah. So, wow, neat. So what I want to do is let's cut to music, and when you said leave the world a better place, and then I said, oh, we have this song called Rot Me, Mama.
Yeah.
It's about composting from the Rot and Roll.
It's from Rot and Roll. Mm-hmm.
And it's a little bit of what you do in your profession.
Yeah, that's right. These guys that you'll hear, they're a trio. They're all trained master composters, as am I. And and we promote the practice of composting in the county, and do it in creative ways sometimes.
Yeah. Well, this will be our opening tune.
Mama, when you're all alone, hey. gonna use it on my veggies and my flowers. Staring at the pile, I'm praying that I did it right. But I laid some browns and then some greens on the lasagna layer, that's what I mean. It's the easiest pile that I could try. So rock me, mama, in a well-built pile. Rock me, mama, with lasagna style.
You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and this is the Made of Clay Report. And our guest on this edition is Adam Michaelides. So, Adam, what are, as you look back on your life, what are some of the experiences that have that you really value that have helped to kind of shape the life that you live now, and why it's important?
Well, hearing that song, thinking about composting. I was inspired by my time in Malawi, Africa. I was a Peace Corps volunteer there in the mid-90s, 96 to 98. And it really changed me. Just living at the time, Malawi was the fourth poorest, quote-unquote, country in the world by economic standards, I guess. Mm-hmm. But it probably was the fourth richest country as far as the spirit of the people and the ingenuity and the warmth of the place. And so I learned a lot. One thing I learned is that what we consider to be waste or trash. Mm-hmm. Really is just a lack of imagination.
Yes.
So where I lived in my house there, I would throw some stuff in the pit. I mean, there was no trash collection, right. So I'd throw some whatever I considered to be trash in the pit and behind my house, and it was always gone. Kids would come by and take the tin cans and use them for cooking pots, and even like shredded plastic bags, kids would collect those and bundle to get them together to make a soccer ball and play soccer with that. And it just, there really was no waste. Everybody was using everything until it like turned into dust. And I came back here I had culture shock, more culture shock than when I left. I mean, I came back, I was substitute teaching in the schools around here. Mm-hmm. And I would, sit there in the lunchroom and see bag after bag after bag of styrofoam trays and uneaten apples and everything just being mounded up and mounded up and mounded up. And that's when I thought, here's something I could do. This is something I could do, and this is something that I want to get involved in. And so I did. That's when I trained as a master composter. Back in 2000, after getting back.
So I want to go back to that time in Malawi. And just, there's an old saw, you can organize for feet or you can organize for bucks. I mean, in terms of, you can have wealth in relationships or you can have wealth in money and things. And they're not mutually exclusive, but they require very different ways of thinking about life. Mm-hmm. And it seems like you kind of got plunked into a place where they really had to think very creatively about the relationships and creatively how to use what little stuff they had in a way you'd never seen it before. Why did that resonate with you? What was going on in you that they hooked, that you embraced?
I guess one of my students, one of my former Malawian students, put it well that, we're collective people. That's mm-hmm. what he said about, himself and his. And I coming from this country, coming from the suburbs, coming from how I grew up, it wasn't so much like that. It was kind of like work hard, get what's yours, you know, just,
yeah.
And so it was eye-opening for me and actually quite refreshing mm-hmm. that, you know what, I don't actually have to do it all myself.
And I know people who've gone to West Africa who've shut down the trend, the experience was so different in their feeling of being an imposition on the people because the welcome in that kind of collective society is oftentimes they will treat you better than they treat their own.
Mm.
And that can be a hard transition. How did you navigate those differences there or find your way into that collective?
Well, I was a little distracted by the question because Malawi is in East Africa.
Oh, okay.
And it's
it's, you know what? I mixed it with Mali.
Mali. Yeah, okay, yeah. That's easy to do.
No.
I got postcards going to Mali. And
Yeah. So forgive me, yes, and forgive me for those who
no worries.
Yeah.
But you know, the experience was similar in that people would literally give me the shirt off their back or kill their only chicken if I was visiting. I mean that it was hard. It was hard to you know, because I cared about them and I cared about you know, I'm privileged. You know, I'm very privileged in a way. And so, you know, I don't want to take the very little that you have.
But they also want to honor you.
Right.
And you cannot you cannot turn that down without dishonoring them.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah. So, you know, learning how to accept generosity was another part of the journey for sure. And at the same time, trying to be generous back. You know, a lot of times I tried to do it with my time and not so much with my stuff because doing it with stuff had, there was a lot of baggage there.
For you or for them?
I would say more. I'm thinking more so for them right now, because there was an attitude of, you know, help me, I'm poor, you know, that was kind of pervasive. And given what I looked like, and given where I was from,
you looked rich.
Yeah, give me money.
Yeah.
So you know, I kind of wanted to not feed that because I didn't like it. I didn't like experiencing it, and I could imagine that it might not be so empowering to be like, you know, I'm not as good as you, so give me money, you know.
Right, or I am as good as you, but I'm in a worse place, and your duty is to give me money. I mean, there are all sorts of it depends on the regard with which one holds oneself and others. And sometimes you can pay for the chicken or say, let me give you something for having served me so well. You know, I mean, then make it an exchange. But those are dicey moves.
They are.
Those are dicey moves.
They are, yeah.
So when you came back, you said the culture shock coming back was greater than going there. And that's not uncommon. In fact, that's more common than not.
Right.
Tell me about what that was. What happened? What were your dreaming? What were your waking hours like? What was the experience of the shock?
Well, I remember spending, you know, maybe 3 hours in the grocery store when I got back, like looking at the aisle of peanut butter, you know, salty, extra salty, smooth, extra smooth, with maple syrup, without. I mean, in Malawi, I was lucky to find one jar of peanut butter, you know, and that's what I would get. So, you know, I'd breeze through the store. So, you know, it was kind of overwhelming coming back, the amount of choices I had. And I also, since other people didn't experience what I experienced there, I felt pretty lonely here, too. As far as, you know, people would come up to me and say, you know, tell me about the wildlife you saw, or you know, were there lions living in your backyard? And it was so far from my experience that I had trouble believing that I would be understood.
Right, right. How can you translate what you haven't even already fully processed?
Yeah, and there was that too. Yeah. There was that too. I mean, I was still... You know, and then it's like, okay, and now what? Yeah. Now, you know, now what do I do with this? And it's, you know, I had changed too. Mm-hmm. I was speaking more slowly, I was speaking more loudly, I was speaking with kind of an African, British, English accent.
Cadence and accent, yeah.
Yeah, so I could be understood.
Right.
And I'd done this for years, so, you know, I was pretty different too.
Mm-hmm.
So, it was, there's culture shock coming back and trying to figure out, okay, well, so what am I going to do here and what's meaningful to do?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was teaching science over in Malawi. That was my job. And it felt meaningful to do that,
mm-hmm.
to help Malawians understand kind of how technology works, and you know, just it seemed empowering to do. And then coming back here, I thought about, okay, well, do I keep teaching science here? And it just didn't have the same meaning.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It didn't seem like it really made a difference. So I was soul searching and trying to figure out, okay, well, what's next, and what would be meaningful here, and what would make a difference?
Right, right. And I want to try to capture something that I haven't heard said much, but whether we travel abroad or not, each of our paths is unique, and in profound ways we're not going to translate for each other. But when we haven't left the culture or the language group or the whatever, we don't realize how alien we can be from each other, even if we've spent, I mean, I grew up in a small town in North Missouri, and people were as different there as you can imagine. I mean, more different than you can imagine. We tend to think of them as homogenous, but their life stories were all over the place,
mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. and their aspirations were all over the place. And there is a quality to respecting the formation of a person, which you go through clearly when you come back, and then you have to decide what's meaningful for me now.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not what it was.
Mm-hmm. And when
we have those kinds of intimate relationships, even with people who don't travel, those are where the real questions are. And they're awkward. And you felt isolated. In part, I imagine people didn't know how to approach you. And in part, I imagine you didn't know how to approach them.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. That's true.
And if we had a higher bar for learning the practices of intimacy, it wouldn't be any less painful, but it would be less scary.
Hmm.
I think that's mm-hmm. that's the
cool
piece. You brought more music. What should we play next?
I want to play the Malawian tunes,
yeah,
since we've been talking about
Yeah, that's what I was wondering.
So this is off of, there is a newer collection of songs that come out of a prison in Zomba, Malawi. I think it came out a year or two ago, and it was nominated for a Grammy. And Malawi is a very small country, and very few people have heard of it. So I wanted to bring in a song to play.
Yes.
Antono muli ndi sambi mukundi pera mwana kodi anala kwa chani ambale Antono muli ndi sambi mukundi pera mwana kodi anala kwa chani ambale Antono muli ndi sambi mukundi pera mwana kodi anala kwa chani ambale Chani, chosandi uzaine abale Mukundi pela mwana, kodi anala kwa chani Chosandi uzaine abale Mukundi pela mwana, kodi anala kwa chani Chosandi uzaine abale Mwana wanga Mwana wanga yo Anala kwa chani Ndafutika na yendeka Kumulela Kumulela ndeka kuchipatala tafutika naye, tafutika naye. Anala kwa chani mwanayo, kumulela ndeka mwana wangayo.
Listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and this is the Made of Clay Report. And our guest on this edition is Adam Michaelides. I'm going to trip over
awesome.
This. But actually being able to mess up on air is kind of a...
Yeah.
It's a helpful thing to do.
Yeah.
And to survive to tell the tale. So Adam, how did you... You know, what was the path that you traveled from culture shock to composting? How did you find this vocation? What was that like?
Well, it was slow. and in between there were some road traveling and some living here and living there, and
not to mention roadkill. No,
yeah, right, yeah. I was kind of in culture shock and not really sure what I wanted to do and not sure how I wanted to make money to survive here and where I wanted to be. And I mean, there were a lot of questions. So, I came back, I had a girlfriend, from Peace Corps in Malawi, and, she lived in Minnesota. So mm-hmm. I spent some time on the road between the East Coast, where my parents lived, in Minnesota, lived for in Ohio with some other friends, and decided, I didn't know what I wanted to do. I just didn't know. But mm-hmm. So I made the decision for the where before the what. I thought, well, okay, well, maybe I can at least figure out where I want to be.
And that actually is a fairly common decision strategy.
Huh.
We often don't talk about it, but many people do exactly what we just did. Yeah.
Huh. Good to know, because I didn't. A lot of people move for
like
a job,
really, yeah.
But you know, but so. So I thought, okay, well, where have I lived that I really like the place? And Ithaca was the place.
Mm-hmm.
I had been here for undergraduate before leaving for Peace Corps, and I loved it here. The culture was great. The natural surroundings being so beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just moved here, and I got a bunch of temp jobs, part-time jobs. I think at one point I had six or seven and at the same time.
Wow.
I was doing, you know, 5 hours here and 5 hours here and 5 hours here. I was making chai for the Ithaca Chai, and I was substitute teaching, and I was working at the Nature Center, and I was doing this and I was doing that. And it was a good strategy for me.
Mm-hmm. Cause you get to know the area and you become known.
Yeah, and it was... Okay, I really don't like this. Oh, this I do like.
Uh-huh,
you know,
uh-huh,
and it was right, a way. Right. It was a way to kind of feel into figuring out how I wanted to spend time and how I want. You know, and so it was at that point that I was substitute teaching in the schools, and I saw the waste, and then I don't even remember how I found out about the Master Composter program. Maybe I saw a poster. I just don't know. Mm-hmm. But I applied, I was accepted, and I trained. And I had a project. My volunteer project was consulting with the Ithaca Farmers Market to revamp their composting efforts at the time. A guy named Steve Sirik, who you probably know, was one of the vendors there, and he was on the committee, the compost committee or whatever, and he and I worked together, and so that was my project mm-hmm. back in 2000. And then the person who trained me left, and the position opened up, and I went for it, and I became the manager of that program, mm-hmm. the compost education program in Tompkins County.
And that was in 2001?
2001.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So I've been at it for a bunch of years
yep.
now.
Yep.
Yeah.
Cool. So well, I want to hear a little bit about how that program has changed over the years, because my sense is that we have become a much more aware community, and the program changes over time when that happens. But also, you have an event coming up, and
yeah, that's right.
Take time to
So let's see, 2001, 2003, 2004, 2005, 2006, 2007, 2008. I probably am on my 15th or 16th master composter training.
Mm-hmm.
I'm doing every year. Our program trains a new crop of master composters. It's always somewhere around 15 people are trained every year, and we are starting our new volunteer training, in 2.5 weeks.
Right.
And so we're accepting applications now, and the deadline is a week from tomorrow.
Oh, okay.
So people still have time to go online and check it out. Or call me over at Cooperative Extension, and I'd be happy to tell people about it too,
okay,
about the opportunity.
Sure. Do you want to give your phone number?
Yeah, the phone number is 607-272-2292.
Okay.
272-2292. And the web address is pretty easy. It's CCE, like Cornell Cooperative Extension, cecetompkins.org/MC. And we call our master composters MCs.
That takes you directly to it. If you went to the just the early part, you'd probably find it too.
Yeah.
Cool. So what do they learn in the, I mean, what do they learn in master composting?
Yeah. I mean, so it's a combination of, you know, kind of learning the ins and outs of composting. And sometimes people kind of sneer or laugh and say, you know, how hard can it be to throw rotten stuff in a pile, right?
Depends on what you want to come out with it the other, you know, 6 months, a year, 2 years, 3 years.
It depends how happy you want your neighbors to be, and how you want the process to work. And it, you know, a lot of people try composting and they fail.
Mm-hmm.
And especially, you know, in a denser population, like in, say, in the city of Ithaca, you really should know proper ways to do it. Otherwise, you know, your neighbors might call City Hall. I mean, it's just, there are pitfalls with composting, and there are kind of more proper ways to do it. And we teach people how to do that. We teach our master composters so they can teach other people. But in the training, it's not just about composting and different methods of composting and how to harvest compost and et cetera, but it's also how to teach it and how to engage people, how to meet people where they are, tips for teaching, say, groups or kids, or, you know, master composters are pretty versatile folks. So part of training is about education, and part of training is about, you know, composting and science and, you know, other fundamental knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So what surprises people when they go through the program? What are there pretty predictable places where they're, oh, I didn't know that? Or
I mean, sometimes people go on to become compost educators themselves, or start their own program somewhere else, or they become a staff member of the solid waste division. I mean, sometimes people are really changed by it. Other people just, you know, they're like a lot of aha moments, like, oh, okay, that's what's been going wrong, and this is how to fix it. Or some people are surprised at how much composting is actually happening, because a lot of times, you know, it's kind of tucked up in the backyard where you can't see it, and people are surprised by how many people in Tompkins County actually compost.
Right.
I know I'm always surprised when we do studies about that.
Mm-hmm. What percentage would you say? Or
well, the last study we did, it was 50. It was 54. Or was it 54 or 57%?
Wow.
People in the county compost.
And how has that come up over the last 20 years? Or do you have data?
We don't do surveys that often because they tend to be pretty labor intensive.
Right.
But the last one we did when I was first coming on board in 2001, It was 40% then. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the surveys had changed. People now are using cell phones more than they did then. And, you know, and so the methods changed. And I try and conduct a really good quality survey, but I'm, you know, I'm not an expert in that either. So,
you know, I grew up on a farm. And so, and we had, it was a more of a subsistence farm than a cash economy farm. So we didn't, the scraps that might go into compost here would go to the pigs or the chickens or whatever, and they would get processed there, and then we would process the manure. Which is probably in some sense a more efficient use of those things. But we had this, I inadvertently discovered composting because we had had a lot that my father had raised sheep in, had kept them in when they needed to, when they were penned up for a while. And then they would go out on the pasture, but that was the lot where they would be when they were in. And then we stacked hay there for 15 years. And then we stopped and we decided we plowed up. Well, we had a garden that was so hot. It was like we couldn't take the vegetables out of it fast enough because it was just producing thousands of pounds of squash and tomatoes and stuff. Yeah. And I had never seen anything like it, but it was all because of this incredible buildup over 20 or 30 years of sheep manure and rotten hay.
Yeah, and the value of organic matter and topsoil in general is highly underrated. You know, the levels of topsoil depletion are really staggering, and you know, something people can do that's proactive and that makes a difference is cycling their own quote-unquote waste materials so that they can make compost and add to the topsoil, make the land more fertile, and at the same time avoid all of the environmental damage caused by more traditional ways of getting rid of waste, as if there's really any way to get rid of it.
Right, you just move it around, and depends on how you process it wherever you move it around to.
And what kinds of unintended consequences there are for moving it around and letting it sit and emit methane.
So let's go to music again.
Okay.
And so what should we play next? I'm going to do the station ID since it's time to do that. You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca. This is the Made of Clay Report. And our guest is Adam Michaelides.
You know, since we've been talking about composting so much, one of the things I'd like to plug is the Grassroots Festival of Music and Dance. Yeah. They've been composting since 1995. So that is how many years? It's over 20 years of composting. Yeah. So
22 this
yeah. yeah. So, you know, kudos to them for having the vision to do it so early in time, and to the master composters who helped them do it. This was before my time. So let's play some Dawn of the Buffalo.
Sure. Okay.
Thanks.
You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and this is the Made of Clay Report, and our guest on this hour is Adam Michaelides. Adam, one of the questions that I like to ask is, how have you found this direction? You've lived here for the last, 15? Before when you were an undergrad?
Yeah, I came here in 99.
Yeah. So how has life kind of put you in a position of learning things you wouldn't have expected, or maybe wouldn't have wanted to? And how have you had to change to accommodate those?
One of the major things that has happened to me over that past time is, a lot of life changes. I bought property in Danby with my now wife. When we bought it, we weren't married. And we have a child, and so these were big personal changes. Really kind of set me on the path I'm on right now.
Right. Right.
Which was different than when it was just me.
Right. And were you anticipating being partnered and having children, or was that something that really wasn't on your radar screen?
I think it was something I wanted to do.
Yeah. Just had to figure out how to make it happen.
But the reality of it, it reminds me of like going to Malawi again. Uh-huh. It's like you don't really know what it's going to be like until you do it.
Marriage is a foreign country, so it's parenting.
That's right. So, I remember it was actually quite hard to have a full-time job and have a relationship and have a young child and live way out away from family. Mm-hmm. And, it was like, okay, now I have two or three full-time jobs and I have to sleep too. It was that intense experience for a while. It was a lot. It was kind of a lot to take on.
So what did you learn about yourself in taking it on that you didn't know before you took it on?
Well, one thing that was, I think, came as a surprise, and one way I've changed is that I know what it means now to, not take care of myself.
Uh-huh.
Because
the consequence of it.
Yeah, well, because I'm in triage. Uh-huh. I don't know about other parents out there, but for me as a parent, I'm going it's so important to me and so meaningful to me to be in that role and have that position that I often, I'm hesitating to use the word sacrifice because I kind of don't believe in sacrifice on some level, but sometimes that's what
you have to choose
experience.
Between options, and you have to let something go.
That's right. I'm in triage. I'm letting something go, and the thing I let go sometimes is my own, my own desires or my own joy or my own, thoughts about what I would be doing. Or I sometimes let go of relationships, of friends, because it just doesn't work anymore, it doesn't fit anymore, and that's been hard. That's been difficult. Mm-hmm. And it's been different.
Right and there are different ways of quote sacrificing or letting go, and I do like to have I like to hold that language in tension. It's a good issue the way you've raised it. There are some things that we sacrifice or we let go of because we're ready to they're in the past. And as much as we might like them to be in the future, they're in the past. And there's a way of saying goodbye that has dignity and honor. And then there's a way of slinking away, which many times we do because we haven't been aware that we needed to let it be in the past. Mm-hmm. And then there's the way of letting it go, which is actually letting go of a piece of yourself that's current, but you do it so that you can have other parts that are whole. And that can be done, not forever, but until you find out that you need to recalibrate the balance to go back and feed something that has been starved. Whether it's a child in you or the child you're with. And that kind of constant balancing, we're doing it all the time, but we're not talking to each other about it.
Yeah.
Not a lot.
Yeah.
Especially as men.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it's so... I think the part that felt challenging for me is just feeling torn and divided about how to figure it out and what to do. And, you know, so for a while, I actually... I downsized my own job. I mean, I didn't downsize my job, but I decided to cut my hours in half and hire somebody else to take on the other hours because I had to restore balance somehow. It was too much. So, I mean, I like your point about it's not forever. I like that point a lot. Sometimes it feels like forever.
Or it feels like it's been much too long.
Yeah. Yeah, right. Exactly.
Pushing on forever.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, like, for example, one of the parts of my life that, you know, has been left behind somewhat is my own, like, love of music and playing music and performing. And, you know, this was something that was important to me pre-child, pre-marriage, I was in bands and I would play out and I would work on songs and I would, you know, it was a big part of me and it was a big part of what I thrived on. And, you know, anymore, I'm lucky if I just take my mandolin with me on a trip and pull it out once.
And find a time, a time.
Right. Yeah, that's right. So there are things I've left behind, for now. Mm-hmm. And, that I actually do look forward to someday getting back to.
I have this fantasy of I played the xylophone and but of having a vibraphone to kind of play, but that I have no time. Or a tongue, even something simple like a tongue drum. Mm-hmm. But I would not. I would have it, but I would not have it because it doesn't fit in my life.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's right. And is it a difficult choice?
I miss the physicality of percussion. I couldn't play an instrument where I had to use my lips because when I get emotional, I have an automatic quiver that I can't control. So I had to figure out how to do musical stuff in a different way, and I miss that. But my life is rich enough, and there are other things that need to happen, and maybe before I die it'll happen, and maybe it won't, and that's. In a certain sense, I'm pretty good with that. Pretty good with that. Cool. There are other fish to kind of fry, to use a poor image, but there are other things that need attention both sooner and then later, and at some point things will come around. What you've described, though, what we're both talking about is being the effort to be. Mature enough to realize that you're letting go of things of value, at least for now, and that has consequences, but you're also embracing things of value, and that has outcomes and consequences, and none of it's perfect. And so the perfectionism rag is just not going to fly, but it's how we live. Where do you see yourself growing as a person? What are you taking in as a next step or as a next concern?
I like your question. So like other people, I see there's quite a lot of need. In the world, I talked at the beginning about trying to leave the place better than I found it, and I'm super concerned about the environment. I'm super concerned about our climate. I'm super concerned about. I have a lot of concerns, I'm in a place of wondering what to do to have the impact that I want to have. I like the empowering people and helping people educate themselves and work with the land and work with resources in a different way. I really like that. To me, it's a constructive thing to do, and I use the word intentionally. One of my heroes is Gandhi, and he had various constructive programs that he used. And so, you know, I see making soil and growing our own stuff as a constructive program, mm-hmm. because, you know, if we can be sufficient, not just individually, but as a community, mm-hmm. then it gives us more power.
Right. Right.
And so I like that tact a lot. There are also, you know, there's also speaking out against what's happening now. I was at the march yesterday mm-hmm. with my family, and we don't usually go to the marches. Yeah. And it's gotten to that point for me where I think I'm going to start doing more of that. Mm-hmm. Then there's the other side of how do we develop as people, which I think is something you're doing, yeah. and getting people to look inside of themselves and kind of evolve consciously,
right?
Which is another
choices,
which is another kind of another angle. And so, you know, I'm interested in all of them, and I only have so much time and energy. Right. So,
I want to frame an issue in a way that is. It may sound hostile. It's not intended that way. But human beings have a pretty perfect track record of having altered beyond recognition or destroyed every environment we've ever lived in for 100,000 years. Whether it's the Native Americans wiping out all the large game and changing the ecosystems because of that, or whatever we've done, so the idea of these skills, these constructive things to do, we do constructive things even in the midst of loss.
Yeah. Yeah,
and having that kind of sober appropriation, mm-hmm. which is what I mean. You didn't say it,
no.
But there's a realism. You're not. I don't see the kind of idealism that we've had in the environmental movement at various points, which is that we can stop destruction or change. It's what we do as human beings. It's the nature of our beastliness.
Yeah, and for me, you know, I'll spend my last breath trying. I mean, that's
making it better or making it go the next.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I guess I think of it as far as maybe not making it absolutely better or empirically mm-hmm. better, but better than is if I wasn't here doing what I did. If that makes any sense.
Let me. I didn't realize when I introduced that word, I didn't realize how much of a rabbit hole I was throwing in, but. So what I hear you and what I really mean is that we can be right with each other even if we can't change the direction of conditions about certain things. Mm. We're all going to die, and we're going to lose loved ones to accidents and bad behavior and all sorts of stuff, as well as just the natural end of life. But if we can make the connections feel like people have lived purposely, have not done intentional damage to each other they could have chosen otherwise, then we have made a positive impact. And in that sense, I mean better. Hmm. That is a very limited sense, but it is the measure between despair and hope.
Nice.
For me.
Yeah, nice.
And you talk about your work in terms of what I would perceive as hope as opposed to optimism. You know, optimism is a calculation that you can actually do some calculations with compost. Mm-hmm. But hope is a stance towards life. Mm-hmm. And it's living into that stance.
Nice.
So
nice.
And all of this is kind of a meandering path into our closing question, which is what do you do on a daily, weekly, monthly, regular, or even throughout the day to take care of yourself emotionally, intellectually, physically?
You know, one thing that I haven't talked about yet that that I do kind of personally mm-hmm. is I've been pretty intrigued by the topic of nonviolence. And so I've been studying nonviolence, and that helps me. Mm-hmm. I also have come across a practice called nonviolent communication, mm-hmm. which kind of stems from nonviolence. And I've been learning about that and practicing it too, and it also kind of helps me to at least frame what I'm experiencing.
Right. So, from in your words, what is nonviolence, and then what is nonviolent communication?
I think nonviolence is another way of saying being like being in a state of connectiveness and like where there is love and the absence of violence and the absence of you know, anything that would keep us from being being in the state of love and connectiveness with one another and of with life,
so that we don't provoke fear or panic.
Yeah, those would be examples of what would prevent us from experiencing. You know, I think the way it came from Gandhi. Gandhi coined the term, I believe. But I think the word was ahimsa, right? Which was the state of connectedness and deep togetherness and love.
Right. And ahimsa is a word.
That's what I was going for.
Ahimsa, which in Jainism means, you know, to do no harm, and the symbol is a hand put up to stop.
So anyway, your original question was about, like, you know, how I, but
before we go back to that, a little bit about nonviolent communication. What makes community? I mean, because there are things that there are truths and awarenesses that we that are going to hurt, and how do we, and they're going to cause damage. Or potentially, or maybe even with ways we don't know. But what is the attitude, or what is the way in which we have these difficult moments, or hold these difficult truths, or these painful, in a way that we can use nonviolent communication?
You know, the crux of nonviolent communication is knowing what our needs are, and seeing the needs as opposed to the judgments. So the idea is not being up in our head judging things as much, and being more in our heart of feeling things. And so feelings which are connected to needs, like the life-serving forces. And so there's a lot with nonviolent communication, there's a lot of translating. You know, I hear this judgment or this attack. What does this person need? What does this person might be feeling? What am I feeling if I'm angry or whatever? You know, what do I need that I'm not getting? You know, and how do I focus on that as opposed to doing something that will actually provoke violence?
Right. And is this a physical expression of outrage or of frustration without being a targeted attack? I mean, that's the being able to determine that. You could take it as an attack, or you could just take it as a very deep expression of pain.
That's right.
Which comes out looking violent, but it's not necessarily aimed at anyone.
Right. And that's the translating I'm talking about. Is it's both how I see other things and how I what I choose to experience myself.
So thank you for the digression. Now, how do you tend to yourself?
I guess it's by doing what I can to kind of, you know, nurture and meet as many of my needs as I can. As far as you know, I love music, so I listen to a lot of music. I listen to music while I'm driving. I try and take my mandolin when I travel. It also takes the form of I love being outside. I love I love hiking. I love having my hands in the soil. I garden. At home, I'm working on a project where I'm putting up a huge fence for an orchard and more garden space. So, you know, I try and move my body. I also try to build friendships and stay connected to other people. That helps me too. And so that, you know, there's a number of things I do that helps me sustain myself.
When do you know you need to take care of, what happens in you that you know you need to take better care of yourself?
I think when I start acting out of alignment with my own values. When I'm out of integrity, you know, it's like, okay, I just said that, or I just thought that, or whatever. And it's like, okay.
When you're, and that would be being aware of one's state of sin in traditional Christian language, because that, you know, when you, and then you can correct it. It's not an absolute, you know, black mark on your soul, but it's just when we, how we know.
Yeah, it's a flag.
Yeah, it's a flag.
It's a flag,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah. Adam, it has been wonderful to get to know you. What should we close with today?
Let's play the Ben Harper song.
Okay. Do you want to say anything about it before we play it?
There's a couple versions of it. I was torn about which one to choose, but I think I chose the original one off of his album, Diamonds on the Inside.
Okay, very good. Let's make sure we got the right one here.
I can change the world with my own two hands, make a better place with my own two hands, make a kind of place. Oh, with my own two hands, with my own two hands, with my own two hands. I can make peace on earth with my own two hands, and I can clean up the earth, Lord, with my own two hands, and I can reach out to you. Oh, with my own two hands, with my own two hands. Oh, with my own two hands. I'm gonna make it a brighter place. I'm gonna make it a safer place. I'm gonna help the human race. Make it a brighter place. I'm gonna make it a safer place.